Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, and welcome to Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. Today, we are celebrating one of the weeks of Asian Heritage Month. You're going to hear a wonderful discussion about how knowing about our own heritage and learning about that of others gives us a greater appreciation of what everyone has contributed to Canada. Let's hear that discussion now. Good afternoon and welcome to Powered by Age, Canada's longest running senior-led podcast. Today is the whole month of May is Asian Heritage Month, and we're going to be having some essays, thoughts, poetry, and maybe even some music. I'm Charlotte Farrell, host of Powered by Age, and I'll just tell you a little thing about Asian Heritage Month. In Canada, it's a time to reflect on and recognize the many contributions that Canadians of Asian heritage have made and continue to make in Canada. Asian Heritage Month has been celebrated since the 1990s. In December of 2001, the Senate of Canada adopted a motion proposed by Senator Vivien Poy to officially designate May as Asian Heritage Month in Canada. In May 2002, the Government of Canada signed an official declaration to declare May as Asian Heritage Month. And over the last two centuries, we're acknowledging that immigrants have journeyed to Canada from East Asia, Southeast, Southern Asia, Western, Central, and Southeast Asia, bringing our society a rich cultural heritage, representing many languages, ethnicities, and religious traditions. So it's a huge land area and many, many cultures. So today, Yoshimi's going to have something special. Fafula is going to share something special. Neil may have a poem. I may have a song. So we're just going to start with having the people that are on first introduce themselves. So we'll start with Yoshimi.
Oh, dear. I hadn't really prepared. So if everybody can just bear with me while I kind of wing it, is that okay?
Yes, that's okay. Well, right now we're just introducing ourselves, so it'll give you a few more minutes for your wings to unfold.
Okay, unruffle them. Okay, my name is Yoshimi Nakano. I'm 77. I'm retired, and I'm a wannabe writer and poet, storyteller, and I'm third generation Japanese Canadian, and my grandparents from both sides, my mother's and my father's parents, came from Japan. They all arrived about in the early 1900s. And my father's parents were born in Steveston, and my mother's parents, they made their way by train, my father, to Kelowna. So they all met in Kelowna. My father and my mother, my father was born in 1915, my mother in 1924. They met by arranged marriage, and they were married in 1942. I was born in 1944, and we were very poor farmers. We worked in the orchards, my parents did, and It was a very, very tough time to be born and working in the Okanagan. There was a very small community of farmers who were Japanese, hardworking, very compliant kind of people. My parents weren't sent to the internment camps because they were already in the Okanagan, and we were restricted with curfews, and we weren't allowed to leave the town. But I had parents. My mother had parents, relatives that were interned in the Kootenays. So it was a very, very challenging time for all of us. And my father would always bitterly say, "We're just nothing but duty Japs. We don't matter. We just are there to provide for the landowners our labor." And so I was born in 1944, and I went to school in South Kelowna, which is a bit more into the hilly area, the rural area. And my brother and I started school a little bit later. I was 7 when I went to school, and my teacher, we were the only noticeably ethnic people, and we were the only students who were Japanese or any other nationality other than whites. My first teacher in grade 1 was Mrs. Foster. She was big and buxom and quite jolly, but she didn't know quite what to do with my brother and I. She said that I was born Yoshimi, but she said nobody would be able to spell my name or to remember my name. So she said, "We'll give you an English one." And they called me Mary. And from then on, I was called Mary. And but school was wonderful, and we had lots of friends, and it was a very wonderful time as children to grow up, because we were just ran wild in the woods and apple orchards, and we had such a wonderful natural upbringing in that way. It was a difficult family life, but my parents had problems on lots of different levels, just trying to put food on the table for us, and they worked really, really hard. But my father had a 1949 Chevy pickup truck, it was, a working man's truck, but he was so proud of it, and we would go up and down the hills to all of the different areas and go into town every once in a while. I was embarrassed about being Japanese. I hated it. I felt very out of step a lot of the time. And I hated to see my parents drive up to the school for PTA meetings and things, because their pickup truck was very primitive looking, and I hated to stand out in the crowd. So a lot of my time I spent feeling like I didn't measure up. But anyway, when I was 12, we moved from Kelowna. My father began his fishing career, and so we moved to Steveston. And for the first time, I went to high school, junior high, and there was a huge Japanese community in Steveston. It was a really seedy little rundown place where they had Japanese houses, very primitive houses and huts and around where people lived, and then lots and lots of fishing boats. But going to school on grade 7, it was wonderful to see all these black-headed students. I felt it was such a joy to see faces that looked like mine. And so there was lots of getting to know the Japanese community. And so I started to embrace my Japanese-ness. And then I was lucky enough to meet a lot of friends who became my friends who were white. And my favorite best friend was Jewish. And she said, what's your real name? And so I said, Yoshimi. And she said, why don't you use that? You use your real name. That's who you really are. And she said, it's so much prettier than Mary. You don't look like a Mary. And I never felt like a Mary. I don't know what that's supposed to be like. But and then as I grew older in my 20s, I was longing to be able to speak Japanese. And so I took some tutoring and some lessons, and I became much more interested in the culture and everything. And so I've totally embraced my Japanese-ness, and so that's my story.
That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Yes. Thank you for listening.
Embracing. How, when your friend told you to use your name and you started to use it, how did that change your outlook on Canada, or living in Canada?
Or did it change?
Well, yes. I mean, when I was a child, I noticed that there were people, you know, the white culture always wanted blonde hair and blue eyes, and I wanted freckles across my nose. And but I didn't, I guess I took on the cultural kind of the wartime things from the adults and the older people, and from my parents, who had a very difficult time. And but I've always felt Canadian. I didn't really dwell so much on that, but with the bitterness part. But but when I went back to my real name, it so much, I started to be interested, and I joined the JCCA, the Japanese Canadian Association. I became a board member. There was a big reunion of the Redress, the Japanese Canadian Redress. I can't remember, it was the 50th year or something. And I wanted to become part of it. So I was asked to write my observation in an article for Japanese American newspaper. It was a small newspaper. And so then I decided, I had never done anything like that, but I did go to the Redress big assembly at the Hotel Vancouver, and I rented filming equipment and sound system that I kind of juggled around, and I got a lot of pictures, and I did a lot of interviews, and then I wrote this article, and I took the Greyhound bus to somewhere. It wasn't Bellingham, but I can't remember exactly now. But then it was published with all my pictures. It was quite, quite wonderful. And to hear all of the different people who had suffered during the war, the depression and everything, and how I learned all their stories of how their properties, their everything was taken from them, and they were shuttled off by train to the internment camps all over the province and to Alberta. And so anyway, I think when I started changing my name, and I was self-employed and I was doing my Japanese massage, shiatsu, and then I opened my own center and named it Shinsen Center. It was translated as Tranquil Forest. And I really embraced my Japanese-ness. And I don't know, everything really changed. Like my whole interior felt at home and grounded. And yeah, that's how I feel right now.
At home and grounded.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Rafula, I think you signed on next.
Oh, okay. Hi, my name is Prafulla Vyasan, and I'm a retired special education teacher, and presently I live in Milton, Ontario. So it's getting to be evening time here, but it's a good time to join this group. So I am also like a wannabe writer, like Yoshimi, and I have been dabbling in short stories that I have published in different places. Maybe a poem here and there. And then I do have a novel that I finished, and I'm actually working on another one. And it's all about India, because I feel very connected to India, because that's where I'm originally from. So I work on the second one. So it's kind of a tough journey, and it's not easy trying to get a manuscript and then get it all, you know, edited and then copy edited and then cover and then finally get to, so I have to get to the stage when I get and put it self-published on Amazon. And so I'm learning, but I guess first time is the toughest time to learn and get to. But I think the second one, the one I started, I was able to finish in less than 6 months, and I managed to write 30,000 words. So learn a lot. Yeah. And now I'm finding that, thank you. You learn, and I did it in 6 months. I did 30,000, which is nice. So that first one took me 2 years. Now the second one took 6 months, and now I'm learning how to work at it, have the ideas, do the plot, think of characters and all that. So it gets easier and easier if anybody's interested in doing any of that stuff. So I come
from a family. What is your novel about?
The first one is about a cozy murder mystery, which is, I'm working on it, an editor and a cover page. So I'm hoping to publish it in July. Cross my fingers, I'm not sure, but I'm hoping, but I'll let you know when it is. And the second one is like 30,000 pages, all about India. And I'm trying to create a really nice, picture of India, but a real problems. And I like to look at issues that people are facing instead of just doing something luxurious and lifestyle and all, because there's all kinds of people that live there, right? So, and little fun, and just enjoy my characters and all that, you know, that's why I enjoy doing it. So now I come from a family of migrants, because my father left India in 1950 or something. I was born in 1948, and he said I was his lucky child, because he was a teacher then, and he got an offer in Africa in 1948 when I was born. So he considered me his lucky child. And I remember going by ship, but one of those ships, it took 6 months to go to Africa. And I was actually raised in East Africa, in a very small country called Malawi. And then, but I was raised in the British system and learned all the British history. And we never learned anything about the country that we were actually living in. Like, I had no idea. Like, you know, it was a British colony. That's all I knew. It was a British colony. And then it got its independence. In 1960s, it got its independence. But we didn't know anything about the country that we were living in, which was rather unfortunate. But anyway, with the sound education, and then my dad started sending us all out of his home. And early age, he just, no, you guys need to go for further education and all that. So I went to India, studied, you know, felt at home there, and then came and finally came to Canada. And I, when I first came to Canada, I was wearing a sari, you know, so when I got at the airport, I had my sari on and little red dot, and I had my hair tied up and like very, very typical. So I stayed like that for a while, and then slowly I changed because I realized I can't wear a sari in the snow, right, and walk around. Slowly, my whole thing changed. No sari anymore, and then I started wearing jeans and T-shirt and a sweater and things like that. But like Yoshimi, my name is Prafulla, and a lot of people are saying, "What? I don't understand. How do you pronounce it? How do you spell it?" And I said, "It's Prafulla, and it's going to stay that way. You know, I'm not changing my name." Because I didn't see the point of changing my name. I said, what name can I have? Like, I can't imagine replacing my name with some other name, you know? And I said, well, that's it. That's all it is. You know, I can't do anything about that. So gradually I learned, and I always stuck to my values and my parents' values. Because we're typical Indian, brought up in a very sheltered Indian way of life. And girls should do this and girls shouldn't do that, and that kind of an upbringing, you know, and all that. And so I remained a strict vegetarian because in my family, we didn't eat meat. My father, mother, we were vegetarian. So I'm the only one from my family members that is still vegetarian, you know. And, thank you. And so slowly, but I meet you, I feel I've been in this country for 45 years or so, and it has changed me. It has really, really changed me a lot, you know. So I am thinking that what I was when I first came in the country with a sari and a slippers, I didn't even wear boots or shoes. I had those slippers, jumper that you wear in India, you know.
Right.
And a little handbag, you know, and so it's funny when you think about it, and my hair was a little longer, like tied up, and you know, and that's how I was. And my husband said, you got to change, you can't stay like this, and you're going to be modern, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. So, but slowly the culture did change, and you know, I changed. So there's good and bad about the culture, but mostly good, and thank God, like in the 70s, when I came, and I was looking for an Indian grocery store. There was only one Indian grocery store in Toronto on Dundas Street. Mm-hmm. And we drive all the way. We used to live in Toronto. So we'd drive to the grocery store on Dundas Street to buy all the spices and everything, right? Because I couldn't cook without the Indian spices. So I needed to have all that. And that I remembered. But look at now. Look at now. Mm. The grocery store around the corner, everywhere, right? And there used to be one or two Indian restaurants in the 1970s. But now look at all the Indian restaurants. Japanese, Indian, Chinese, Mexican. Yes. So I think I'm very fortunate to be living in Canada.
Did you find when you were teaching that the children were interested in knowing more about Indian culture or your heritage?
Well, you know, by the time I got into teaching, the classroom was full of Indian kids. It was like, by the time I got into it, because I got into teaching a little later, because I had to raise my daughter. And so I made sure she went through university, and then I started teaching. So by that time, the kids were all mixed up, like, you know, and they learned the, you know, heritage from each other, because they go to cafeteria and there'll be Mexican and there'll be Chinese and there'll be Indian and there'll be, you know, English food and so forth. So the kids knew all about it, you know, by that time. So I didn't have to worry. When I started working, my first job was with the Bank of Montreal, and I started working as a telex operator. So I don't know if anybody remembers. You know, if you
those are people that connected the calls was telex when they stuck in the cords to connect the calls.
Yeah, it was. I was scared. I said, "What is that? You're going to be connecting to someone far away in China?" And I said, "How do I do that? Like, it scares me." It was connected. It was like a typewriter, and I got the messages from upstairs. And they say, you have to type this message and then press this button and press that, and then that tape would go through it. I don't know what it was, but it was a computerized, I guess it was a computer, because that was my first job as a telex operator. You know, I think it's kind of funny.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. We'll be looking forward to hearing a reading from your book. All of the authors have been sharing some of their readings, so we'll schedule a time for you to do a reading.
Well, that'll be so nice, and it doesn't feel real at all to me right now. It's like, I don't know if Neil feels the same way, but when you have your own words written, you feel they don't seem to have any weight or worth, right? So it's only when someone tells you, gives you feedback, then you think, oh, that's pretty good, you know?
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you. Leslie?
Yeah, so congratulations, Prafula, on finishing your novel. That's quite an accomplishment, actually.
Yes, very much.
Thank you.
And I must say, the first time when we first got a phone when I was a child and I had to use the phone, I was scared to answer it. So there you go. My background isn't nearly as interesting as Yoshimisa Prafula's. I am also an immigrant. I'm from the United Kingdom. I was born in London in 1948, which was right after World War II, and grew up with houses around me that were still damaged from the Blitz. Mm-hmm. We moved to a new town, which the government was building to rehouse all the people that were left homeless by the war. Moved to a new town north of London. Stayed there until I left high school, then went back into London to work. And from there, I came to Canada, looking for new opportunities, new horizons, and settled on Vancouver because the climate was very similar to the rainy weather in London. So didn't want to face those cold Eastern Canadian winters. So, yeah, so that's my story.
Another story that she's sticking to.
Leslie, mm-hmm. You were born in 1948?
Yes.
Oh, it's the same age then.
Yeah.
What month were you born in?
In June. How about you?
Guess what? December 24th.
Oh, okay.
The birthday baby. I mean, no, Christmas baby.
gift to mother at Christmas time.
Yes. So, Neil, what about you?
Well, I have some interesting experiences that makes me multicultural. Mm-hmm. I speak Skoshi Das. I speak a little bit of Japanese. Yoshimi-san. Nihonjin desu ka?
Hai, Nihonjin desu ne.
Hai, so desu ne.
Hai.
I also speak Japanese, a few words, Korean, a few words, Tagalog, a few words, my favorite poem of all in the world is from the Mahabharata, the Indian Bible, the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
I am the ritual and the worship, the medicine and the mantra, the butter burned in the fire. That's the most perfect description of God that I have ever read anywhere, and I've read lots. I speak Ukrainian. In fact, I don't know if you can see, but I'm wearing the Ukrainian flag today.
Oh, wow. Oh,
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not Ukrainian. I just fell in love with a Ukrainian girl in high school, and I thought I could get accepted if I learned Ukrainian. So I went to the local church and said, teach me. So at one point in time, I could read and write because it's a Cyrillic alphabet, but that's pretty much gone now. And I want to tell you a short story that epitomizes the way I see the world. I was at somebody's birthday party downtown in right downtown Vancouver yesterday. I live in Burnaby. And on the way back,